Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. This is a news item just coming out the last day or so. It's dated June 16th, and it says here on the website on CNN that it was just updated about 3 hours ago, but it's in the CNN politics section. It says this, Jindal says that legal action is on the table to combat EPA rules. The article then goes on to say Governor Bobby Jindal said Monday that a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency is, quote, on the table, unquote, in efforts to counter the Obama administration's proposed restrictions on carbon emissions from power plants. The Louisiana Republican and presidential 2016 presidential candidate said Washington is waging a, quote, war on coal, unquote, calling the EPA rules part of a radical ideology of President Barack Obama's energy policy. Jindal joined three other Republican governors, including Texas Governor Rick Perry, who is also considering a run for the White House, in arguing that the Environmental Protection Agency's actions would harm their state's economies and raise energy prices. The White House has taken on climate change as a top issue in Obama's second term, announcing earlier this month proposed restrictions on power plants that would reduce emissions by 30% from 2005 levels by 2030. Obama's rollout of the administration's new effort to reduce the nation's biggest source of pollution, blamed for global warming, has incited a firestorm of criticism from Congress and sparked a multi-million dollar campaign backed by energy industry seeking to debunk the science of climate change. And the article goes on from there. Well, I was thinking about this issue with the EPA, and I was maybe think about an article that I read recently out on the Cornwall Alliance newsletter. And that article was talking about what the Greens get wrong. The Greens are being referred to as the radical environmentalists. It says part of it, as I posted this morning out on a Facebook post, says, I wrote this, the EPA says that it can see hundreds of years into the future and that they can, and what they see is catastrophic. And I wrote, can you imagine having that ability? It would be comparable to people living in the 1700s attempting to accurately predict what life would be like today. Well, Dr. E. Calvin Beisner joins me today to talk about the EPA's dire predictions and how they compare with what the Bible says about God's creation. The article that I was referring to out on the Cornwall Alliance website goes by the name of Back to the Basics, What the Greens Get Wrong and How to Set Them Straight. And here to talk us through that argument and that article this morning is Dr. E. Calvin Beisner. He is the founder and national spokesperson for Cornwall Alliance of the Stewardship of Creation. Their website is www.cornwallalliance.org. That's www.cornwallalliance.org. Cal, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thanks, Kevin. It's good to be with you.
Oh, if you would, please, set out what the EPA is seeking to do and what they're talking about with this idea of the cost of carbon and how that impacts everyday Americans and industry and the economy and so forth here in the United States.
Yeah, what they want to do, according to the regulation, the new rule that they just set forth for public comment, that should be going into effect if it doesn't get turned around later this year or early next year, would be to require a 30% reduction in carbon dioxide emissions from power plants in the United States below 2005 levels by the year 2030. And that has been estimated by a good economic forecasting firm to cost the U.S. economy an average of about $50 billion, about $49.5 billion. I'm sorry, yeah, it is actually $50 billion per year to achieve that. It would also cost a reduction in employment of about 240,000 to 250,000 jobs each year between now and 2030. In addition, it would cause electricity rates to rise quite considerably. We could probably figure on an average of over $1,000, perhaps $1,200 per year per household around the United States, and that's just simply for private households, personal family homes. Then there would also be the added electricity costs for businesses and churches and schools and so on, government buildings and et cetera around the country. The cost to the total economy would be very high, and the actual impact on global average temperature, which is supposedly the justification for doing this, would be something in the neighborhood of 18 thousandths of 1 degree Celsius by the end of this century. That's, well, it's theoretically calculable using the models that the EPA uses, but it's not detectable. And it certainly would have no impact on life on Earth of any sort, human life or otherwise. So essentially what this is all pain, no gain.
You point out in the article, too, where they do this calculation about $40 per ton, where they're looking at a ton of carbon dioxide. And you question whether or not, first in the article, whether or not that is an accurate calculation or not, and they seem to be looking way off into the future and claiming that they have the ability to forecast that far into the future. Tell us a little bit about that forecasting prediction that they make.
Right. Well, the prediction assumes certain responses of ecosystems, of agricultural crops, of human infrastructure and so on to given levels of warming caused by added CO2 in the atmosphere. At every step of the way, there are huge uncertainties involved in that. At the very beginning, we have the problem of knowing how much warming comes from added CO2 in the atmosphere. We don't have any direct way of observing that over the long term. So what the scientists do who are connected with the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and with the EPA is they use computer models. The problem with that, though, is that the computer models have far overestimated the amount of warming that has happened over the period for which we have good data. From 1980 to the present, these computer models have, 95% of them, have overestimated the actual warming that's occurred to the tune of anywhere from 2 to 6 times as much as has occurred. None of the models, not a single one, predicted that we would have no warming at all from about August of 1997 to the present. But that is, in fact, what we've had, is no warming from then to now. That is 17 years and, at this point, almost 10 months. So what that tells us is that the models are wrong, that they do not accurately represent how the climate system, which is not just the atmosphere, it's also the land and the oceans, they don't accurately understand how the climate system works and how it responds to added CO2. then there are the guesses, really, as to what happens to crops, to various other living things, and to ocean and so on in response to the change in temperature, whatever change in temperature that might be. And what we know from the observations is that the warming from added CO2 is much, much less than what the computer models would suggest that it is. And then, of course, these predictions that the EPA is trying to make in order to come up with a cost of carbon dioxide to the human economy over a period of several hundred years, they also have to assume that we know what kinds of technologies we're going to be using for energy and all sorts of other things a couple hundred years from now.
Mm.
Well, you know, who 150 years ago could have, in his wildest imagination, have guessed that we would now be making vast amounts of electricity from small lumps of uranium in nuclear reactors? Nobody could have guessed that.
Hmm.
Nobody could have guessed that we would be using gasoline in a way that we do now that moves cars and trucks vast distances at very low cost. We change our technologies very rapidly. So the fact is we simply do not have any really good scientifically reliable or economically reliable way to make these forecasts. And so the notion of a social cost of carbon that could be put anywhere near $40 per ton is just indefensible.
And not only that, with their data being questionable, but one of the things that they leave out and that you bring out in this article out on the CornwallAlliance.org website is you bring out the well-known benefits of added CO2 emissions. Speak a little bit about what some of the benefits are.
Yeah. Well, first, let's just assume for a minute that... And I deny this, but let's assume it for a minute. Let's be really generous to the other side and assume that there's as much warming as they think from adding CO2 to the atmosphere. The result of that is to enlarge the effective growing areas of the Earth, both northward and southward. We make much more land farmable. We also enlarge it upward, that is, higher altitudes, because we don't have so much cold. In addition, we lengthen the growing season everywhere. You don't get frost as late in the spring. You don't get it as early in the autumn as you otherwise would. So even assuming their scenarios, you get increased agricultural yield from around the world. But now, let's also just think about the direct impact of CO2. For every doubling of CO2 concentration in the atmosphere, you get an average 35% increase in plant growth efficiency. And the best studies done so far indicate that over the period from 1960 through 2011, the added value of food harvested from farms in the world, solely because of added CO2 in the atmosphere, not because we're better at farming, not because we, you know, we use better fertilizers or pesticides or anything like that, but simply because there's no CO2 in the atmosphere, is about $3.2 trillion.
Hmm.
And in fact, we can also project forward the same kind of a pattern and see that over the next, well, at this point, the next 37, 36 years to 2050, there would be an added roughly $9 trillion worth of food in the world just because there's more CO2 in the atmosphere. So if we really want to calculate a social cost of carbon dioxide, we need to not only look at whatever negatives there might be, perhaps some sea level rise, perhaps, well, certainly there might be more heat waves, although those are offset by the fact that there are fewer cold snaps, and 10 times as many people die in cold snaps per day as in heat waves. But anyway, we need to not only look at the negatives, we also need to look at the positives. And it looks like the positives pretty far outweigh the negatives.
Cal, the president himself and many of those in his administration, they've ratcheted this up recently, even going so far as to openly mock those that disagree with the calculations made by the EPA and some of the scientists that they like to quote. And part of that mocking that takes place, you know, where he talks about people being members of the Flat Earth Society, if you don't believe.
By the way, yes, there is an actual Flat Earth Society, and its official position is in support of global warming alarmism.
So every time he quotes that, he's actually, doing a dig back at himself.
Yeah.
But in those groups, when they mock these things, where they mock good science that is disagreeing with what the government is telling us about global warming and so forth, they seem to imply as well that we are not compassionate. And we're just interested in dirty air and dirty water, and we don't care about people and so forth. But actually, the opposite is true, right? I mean, these EPA regulations are going to impact the poor at a greater extent than they are the rich. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. In fact, I just published an article in Christian Post. It came out a couple of days ago called, let's see, what was our title on that? It was, no, I can't even remember the title of the article, but basically it was about turning Christian ethics on its head and turning it upside down hating your enemies and crushing the poor.
We're getting a little bit of static, just so you know, on your phone. So if you've moved at all to look for that article, you may have moved to a spot where we're just not getting it as clear, just so you know.
Okay. This article in Christian Post a few days ago, Hate Your Enemies, Crush the Poor, EPA's New Rules on Carbon Dioxide Turn Christian Ethics Upside Down, points out that, in fact, fulfilling the EPA's new mandate about carbon dioxide emissions would have no significant impact on global average temperature, as I discussed earlier, but would, in fact, drive up energy prices around the United States. And the people who would be hurt the most by it are the people on lowest income, because they spend a higher percentage of their income on energy than do all the rest of us. So, in fact, the non-compassionate side is over there. The EPA claims that there are going to be health benefits from this, but their claim rests on saying that what's necessary to reduce CO2 emissions would also reduce the emissions of other substances, such as sulfur dioxide or soot, what's called PM2.5, very, very tiny particulate matter. And EPA claims that these substances increase rates of asthma and certain other kinds of respiratory diseases. Now, the fact is that the law already requires EPA to regulate those substances down to a level that is safe for human health, and in fact beneath that level far enough to have a solid margin of error. So if the EPA is going to try to justify its new CO2 regulations by claiming that they will have benefits for these other emissions, then they're either admitting that they are not doing what they're required by law in regulating those others anyway, or that that they have been lying by saying that the new CO2 reductions would result in reductions of actual health benefit in those other emissions. So, you know, EPA is, one way or another, it's wrong on this. And the fact is that asthma rates have grown at the very same time that the rate of emissions and the atmospheric concentration, the ambient concentration of these other emissions, have fallen, which indicates that the very idea that those things are driving asthma rates is mistaken.
Mm.
So, no, the compassion argument won't work for EPA. The fact is that it's the poor who get hurt the most by this new regulation.
Hmm. Cal, when the government is pushing something so strongly and the president is really out campaigning on this whole global warming push and the EPA regulations and so forth, we've learned to ask the question, who is profiting from this? You know, if the poor are losing out, which we just concluded from your statements there, the poor are losing out, the mainstream America, it's going to cost them more money, upwards of $1,000 to $1,200 more per year for energy costs. Who is profiting from this?
Well, we could start with all the various different businesses that produce the technologies for alternative energy, that is, the solar firms, the wind turbine-making firms, biofuels firms. For instance, we require a certain number of billions of gallons of gasoline, of ethanol, mixed into the United States gasoline supply each year. EPA requires that. And that benefits corn growers around the United States. That is at the expense of everybody else, because as that corn is used to make ethanol for our gas tanks, it's taken out of the market for use to feed livestock to make meat for our tables. And that's a major part of the reason why the price of meat has gone up, but it's also, much more importantly, a major part of the reason why the price of grain has gone up around the world.
Mm.
To the point where it's terribly hurt the poor in the developing world. The best economic study on this that I've seen, published a couple of years ago, concluded that U.S. ethanol policy results in an excess 192,000 premature deaths every year in the developing world. So we've got the makers of alternative energy who benefit from this. But also, if you have a vision of government that says government should be in control of every part of our lives, and that, I think, is basically Barack Obama's vision of government, if you've got that vision of government, this kind of policy is the perfect way to get at that, because by controlling all of energy, you control all of life. Everything we do requires energy. Turn the lights on, energy. Run your car, energy. Run a factory, energy. Transport food to market, energy. Get more food from market to home, energy. Everything you do, you're using energy. And so if the government can control energy, that expands the government's reach into our lives all across the board.
Hmm.
So that's part of it as well. In addition, if you embrace a sort of a cosmopolitan view that transcends national boundaries and says, hey, you know, we think that nation states are old-fashioned. We need to be headed toward a one-world government. That's going to bring peace. That's going to bring justice. That's going to bring prosperity around the world. If you believe that, well, global warming is a global issue, and addressing it would require addressing control of energy all around the world, and that would only be doable through some sort of a global governance system. So if you're into that, you benefit. So there are a variety of different ways that people benefit. In fact, just simply in the complex of how science gets funded here in the United States and throughout much of the rest of the world, governments provide most of the funding for science, for scientific research.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, if you don't think there's a big problem to be solved by your scientific research, you're not likely to get funding. But if you can say, oh, yeah, there's a huge catastrophe around the corner, we need to do a lot of scientific research to understand it and figure out what needs to be done to prevent it, well, then you're going to get funded.
Mm.
So government funds this scientific research. And some people will complain, well, you know, big oil or big coal or whatever, you know, big fossil fuels is funding a lot of skeptical scientific research about this issue. Well, okay, suppose that it were. As a matter of fact, it's a tiny, tiny bit. But suppose that it were. Nonetheless, it is only a tiny fraction of the tens of billions of dollars every single year that even just the American federal government spends on climate change-related scientific research.
You're absolutely right. I'm sorry, but we're at the just running out of time here. But thank you so much, Cal, for talking about all of those points. You're absolutely right. I want to make sure we give folks the opportunity. I'm going to give them the website again and where they can go to read the rest of your article out there. I want to tell them about some of the resources as well. Cal, thank you so much for writing about these issues and leading the charge there at the Cornwall Alliance. We really appreciate the efforts that you make on this front, and we appreciate you being with us this morning on the program.
Thank you, Kevin. Come visit us on Facebook, Cornwall Alliance.
All right. Thank you, sir. That was E. Calvin Beisner. He's the Dr. E. Calvin Beisner. He's the founder and national spokesperson for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. One of those resources that he mentions in this article is called Mere Environmentalism, A Biblical Perspective on Humans and the Natural World. It's written by Stephen Hayward. You can go out there to see how you can get a copy of this book. Their website is www.cornwallalliance.org. They have a newsletter you can get on as well. Just sign up for the newsletter out there, and it'll come right into your email inbox. The article we were talking about dealt with what the Greens get wrong and how to set them straight. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.